In the wake of the murder of George Floyd by the Minneapolis police last year, Governor Andrew Cuomo directed all the police departments in New York to submit updated public safety plans to the state that reflected their community's current policing priorities and goals. As departments are in the process of implementing those plans, some of which call for significant reforms, the State Bar Association's Task Force on Racial Injustice and Police Reform advanced a report in June with its own recommendations for overhauling public safety in New York. For more on these ideas, we're joined by T. Andrew Brown, the task force's co-chair, the new president of the State Bar Association, and founder of the law firm Brown Hutchinson. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Good morning, David.
So your task force was launched last year after the killing of George Floyd. What was the mandate that you had?
David, as you know, misconduct in policing, especially directed towards blacks and other people of color, has long been a problem in the United States and here in New York. The killing of George Floyd prompted a new call to action across the country and, in fact, across the globe. And here in New York, we have taken a look at it, a new, fresh look at it, both at the state level, local levels, within our government structures, but also the New York State Bar Association, being an association of lawyers who work within the legal system and policing system day in, day out, also took a look at this issue. And the task was really to look at the state of the law, engage a varied collection of stakeholders, those with relevant information, including former police officers, defense counsel, prosecutors, judges, and others in the community that have been affected by policing in one way or another. And our task was to come up with recommendations that we thought could supplement existing reforms that have been enacted in New York, and try to do what we can to help address this plague on our society.
So we've had a lot of recommendations over the last 13 months on how to improve community policing, whether it's disclosure of police personnel files, limits on certain tactics, new training, and the list goes on, with some of the measures implemented on the local level, some enacted by the state legislature last summer, and others still remaining on the to-do list. What items on the to-do list in New York, or items that aren't even being talked about, is your task force recommending that be revisited and potentially implemented?
Some of the things that we've been talking about have been talked about for a long time. Some of the things that we've talked about have not been enacted on a statewide level. Some of the recommendations are in place in some municipalities, but not others. Again, what we did is we looked at a number of various stages of policing. We also looked at the criminal justice system itself, and we came up with a number of recommendations that some really go into effect right out of the gates when we look at the various stages of policing. From hiring stage, we looked at recommendations that we made with respect to training and on the job and mentoring, or rather monitoring and discipline of police officers. We also looked at the role of the community. We looked at the role that attorneys play. We looked at the role that courts play and other aspects within the criminal justice system. And there are many recommendations that collectively, along with the other reforms that have been put in place in New York, can go a long way. And David, you mentioned at the outset the requirement of communities to engage in a process to review their policing structures and to come up with better ways of policing. That is Executive Order 203 that you're referring to, and I believe that that can go a long way because it really, for the first time, requires every single community that has a policing agency to go through this process. And really what they're doing is taking account of their own policing structures, their policing agencies, and looking at how they can be improved. And it really is a matter of improving them to be part of what we view as 21st century policing. That is bringing policing into the modern age. And that includes making the police agency responsive to the communities that they serve and having policing agencies become more a part of the community, not as some military structure on the outside, which is what we've seen in many instances, and that results in problems. We believe that policing agencies should be part of communities, should be entrusted by the communities, and we believe that communities should play a bigger role in oversight. And that's one of the recommendations that we make, is that communities have a bigger role in reviewing policing structures, in advising policing structures, investigating wrongdoing in policing, and also having the ability to discipline where necessary. We know that that is necessary because we know that leaving it the way it's been seemingly forever is not worked. So we know that things have to be done differently. And if we start out with searching out the and recruiting the right men and women to be police officers, and then we train them right and we train them sufficiently, which is a big area of concern that we looked at, and then we put them in a job and in the field and continue to give them the supports they need, then we can be proud of the men and women that serve our communities as police officers. And I will say, David, one of the things that we want to make very clear is we don't have a problem with policing. We value policing. We endorse good police officers and practices. We have a problem with bad policing, and that's one of the things that we're looking at trying to address.
In case you're just joining us, we're talking about police reform recommendations from the State Bar Association's Task Force on Racial Injustice and Police Reform, and our guest is the task force's co-chair, T. Andrew Brown, who is also the new president of the New York Bar Association. Well, I'm glad you bring up that idea of good policing being a possibility within our existing framework, because I was struck by the quote that you had that went out with the press release announcing these reforms, because you note that these police departments were established in the 18th century, and I think that's a nod to the racist roots that some of the law enforcement in its origin has, and this is something that police reform activists on the left point out pretty constantly when they talk about the need for radical overhaul as opposed to reforming around the margins. So based on your recognition of the history of the police department with that quote, maybe I'm reading too much into it, though, do you think that it's possible to reform these institutions by, you know, making, you know, changes around the margins, or does this whole structure need to be blown up?
David, I'm glad you mentioned that because you're correct. If you look at the earliest policing structures or agencies akin to what grew into modern-day policing agencies, blacks have always been targeted disproportionately. Some of the earlier police patrols were structured around ensuring that blacks remained enslaved, and you had slave patrols that went around to ensure that blacks stayed in line. And out of that, over time, right up to this day, blacks have been wrongfully targeted. And disproportionately targeted, and that has resulted in significant violations of blacks and their rights to this day. I do believe that policing can be improved. I myself have represented police officers in the past. I've represented policing agencies in the past. I know that most men and women in policing agencies are good law enforcement officers. And they do a good job, and they're worthy of wearing the badge. But there are some within any large agency, of course, that you can't say that about. So, again, we're not – I don't see a problem with policing. Generally, I see a problem with bad policing. I do believe that changes need to be made. If we continue on the way we have, allowing police agencies to govern themselves, essentially allowing the police to police themselves, is not worked. And we know that we have to do some things differently. And I believe that if with legislative reform and with some of the recommendations that we've mentioned, we think that can go a long way. One of the things that we talk about, David, is with respect to training of officers. Once we bring in the right collection of men and women to be police officers, then we have to train them. We have to do a better job of training them. We have to train them to be part of the community, to be able to be guardians of the community, to be able to build trust within communities. And that also includes a sufficient number of hours of training. To be a police officer in New York, you only need 700 hours. That's inadequate. That's what, 2 or 3 months of training or of education to become a police officer. That's not enough. If you look at other countries, most countries require substantially more than that. Some countries require as much as 4,000, even 5,000 hours of training. Most European countries require between 2,500 and 3,000 hours of training. In New York, we require 700 hours, and if you look at European countries, they also require the police officers to attend college, at least 3 years of police college. That's real college. Here in New York, we don't require a college education, and that's one of the things that we also talk about. We recommend that police officers have at least 60 hours of college credits, and that is, in fact, already a requirement in New York City, and we believe that can be very helpful to the issue of addressing police misconduct. If you look at the training that require a police officer in New York, it's less than what is required to become a cosmetologist or a massage therapist. And those individuals are licensed. In New York, there is no requirement for a police to be licensed. There's no requirement for anything beyond a college diploma. We believe that we can do better than that, and we believe that we have to, and that is something that we believe citizens of this state are entitled to.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation about improving policing in New York with T. Andrew Brown, the president of the New York State Bar Association and co-chair of the association's Task Force on Racial Injustice and Police Reform.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and in case you're just joining us, we're continuing our conversation about police reform recommendations from the State Bar Association's Task Force on Racial Injustice and Police Reform, and our guest is the task force's co-chair, T. Andrew Brown, who is also the new president of the New York State Bar Association. So you mentioned the college requirement that the Bar Association is proposing. Why do you think it's important to have at least some college experience? Is it about getting that liberal arts education and overhauling the way people think and making people think more comprehensively, holistically? Or is there something else to higher education that might produce better police officers?
Studies have shown that men and women who have at least some college experience are less likely to violate the rights of citizens. They are also much less likely to use levels of to use force. And if they use force, they're more likely to use lesser levels of force. They're also less likely to be brought up on disciplinary charges. And that's important. We believe that if more people are required, or if everyone is required to have some college training, we believe the number of cases of misconduct can be reduced. And that is something that we are optimistic for, and that is why we are recommending it. More than 50% of police officers in the United States already have some college experience. Most already have an associate's degree. More than 30% already have a four-year college degree. Here in New York State, all police officers in New York and New York City have to have at least 60 credits, which is the equivalent of an associate's degree, or at least have some relevant military experience. We believe that, again, that can go a long way in addressing the need for police reform in New York.
Another issue that we've talked about on this show, but not one that was advanced by the legislature, has to do with reforming qualified immunity. Can you talk a little bit about what qualified immunity means for police officers? And did your task force make any recommendations on this issue?
Yes. We believe that qualified immunity should be looked at, and there should be a new cause of action that New York citizens have that they can bring claims of misconduct and not be barred by qualified immunity. Qualified immunity is a defense when there's actions that do not violate a clearly established statutory or constitutional right. It's easy to make this defense, and we have seen many instances over time where courts have granted qualified immunity. And what that means is you can then not go forward with your claim against a police officer who may well have done some wrong that everyone can look at and say, yeah, there's a clear constitutional violation here, but you can't bring that claim because there is not some other prior set of facts that are exact or closely enough, similarly closely enough, so that the officer can be said to have clearly known of it. The way that plays out in the courts is that many individuals who would otherwise have a right against the officer for a constitutional violation cannot then go forward with that claim. There is discussion here in New York, the New York State Legislature, to create a state-level action where that would not be the case, where police officers would not be able to claim qualified immunity to escape the wrongdoing that they may have carried out on one of our citizens. And we believe that that can go a long way. We know that bills were enacted last year, and I would assume that there would be some ongoing discussion and debate around qualified immunity. But hopefully in the next over the next year, we'll see a bill passed.
Now that these recommendations are out there, I guess, what do you hope to do with them? Do they just sit in a file somewhere at the Bar Association, or will you guys be actively lobbying or advocating or trying to get these implemented somehow?
We will do everything that we can to get them into the hands of the various stakeholders, whether they be elected officials at the local level or senior ranking officers within policing agencies. We also will get them into the hands of the courts and criminal justice system. We believe that these recommendations, again, with other efforts of reform, can go a long way. Certain things that we would have had in our recommendations are not there because they have been already enacted through state legislation. But we believe that all of the stakeholders have a role to play. All of the stakeholders within communities have a role to play. So what we'll be doing is getting these recommendations out there and into the hands of as many people as we possibly can, because we believe that everyone has a voice and should exercise it. When it comes to issues of justice, we all have an obligation as citizens of this great state to do what we can to ensure that injustice does not take place, and that equal and equitable justice is there for all citizens.
One of the big ticket reforms that was implemented last year by the state legislature and signed into law by the governor has to do with making police disciplinary records available to the public. In implementation, though, there have been a lot of roadblocks to this, legal challenges from police unions who don't want to get information released, especially records prior to when the law was enacted. What's your take on these legal battles that we're seeing right now? Do you think there's a chance that the legislature needs to revisit this issue, or do you expect courts to rule against these obstacles and police disciplinary records will become much more accessible in reality?
I do think that the legislature and the courts will probably have to do more to ensure that records become available. I know that many municipalities, policing agencies, and perhaps most aggressively unions have challenged the release of records, and they have gone to great lengths to delay the release of records, if not to prohibit the records fully and permanently.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to change. If we don't have access to records, you don't have access to information to be able to even know what misconduct is taking place, or at least the level of misconduct that is taking place. And I know that. I mean, I've represented, again, police officers, and I have challenged requests for police records because you had 50A. But now that it's been changed, it's important that that these records become available. And when you reveal records that show misconduct, that's not a problem for good police officers and for lawfully performing police officers and policing agencies. Quite frankly, it's usually a small number of police officers within any agency that is doing all the wrongdoing. That is not a good thing for law-abiding police officers. So by revealing misconduct, that helps everyone. It helps the policing agency. It helps the municipalities. It helps those men and women who are lawfully performing their jobs every day. Recommendations and reform around reform are not a problem for those who are carrying out their jobs lawfully and doing what we expect of them as police officers. Who have problems with it are those who perhaps are trying to hide something from the public, and we need to know what that is so that we can then speak to it and address it and correct it.
And finally, we've mentioned that communities all over the state have been required to submit updated policing plans to the state. And I think it's been pretty widely reported that there have been various levels of engagement by police departments and their municipalities in terms of how much reform and overhaul they wanted to do, whether they were content with the status quo, for example. Have you had a chance to look at any of these plans? And if so, do you think any are really hitting the mark? Or do you think any have been just completely oblivious to the state and national calls for change?
I think, and I have looked at some, and I will continue to look at them. I believe there are more than 500 communities in the state of New York that have policing agencies of some sort, so Right. They all had to do them. There may be even more than that. So there are a lot of those reports out there. Those that are praiseworthy are the ones where you had a true engagement of all components of the community. You had police agencies, you had elected officials, you had community citizens and activists, you had people come together and sit down in earnest to look at the question of why do we need a policing agency? What should it do? What should its mission be? How can it serve the community? And how can it improve itself? Let's look at the existing plan of operations and talk about how it can be changed to be more fair, more equitable to all citizens, not just to some, because we know that certain people, especially people of color, have been on the unfortunate end of policing and have been most subjected to wrongful conduct by policing agencies. That harms everyone in the community. And those who have taken an honest look at those questions and sat down together to talk about how things can be improved are the ones that will end up seeing the most benefit from the exercise. Those that simply said, oh, no, we don't have to worry about this new requirement under this executive order because we're already doing things right. We don't have any problems here. Those communities or those policing agencies that took that approach are the ones that we most have to be concerned about.
Well, we've been speaking with T. Andrew Brown. He is the co-chair of the State Bar Association's Task Force on Racial Injustice and Police Reform and the new president of the State Bar Association and founder of the law firm Brown Hutchinson. Andrew, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, David. It was my pleasure.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.